Welcome to Adventist Waves.
Have you ever wondered what it takes to be a sound engineer? Well, buckle up your seatbelts, because we're about to explore the journey of Linus Wee, the audio engineer and arranger of the compositions on Loud Voice. I got the opportunity to travel just south of Kuala Lumpur to a place called Tampin. Pain and Health Center is nestled here in the hills on the outskirts. And here I was, in the Loud Voice studio, talking with Linus about his journey. Yeah, so we've discussed a bit already before, but audio engineering has quite a important part to play in Adventist music, doesn't it?
And
the Adventist world itself. If it wasn't for audio engineers, the content that is currently out there in the Adventist world just wouldn't be possible. And so hence why it's really important that engineers, the voices of engineers, is heard, that there's a place where people can discuss and collaborate on ideas in the Adventist ecosystem as a whole. My work at Blue Vineyard is as a director of audio, we're trying to build like a network of professionals, of Adventist professionals, especially in the area of audio, so then we can have, you know, a worldwide network that musicians can feed into, audio engineers can find work from, and basically to be self-sustaining. And that's kind of my vision for our department. And part of that, Linus, is this podcast on Adventist Waves, where we are discussing about the creative works of different professionals. And like yourself, as an audio engineer, you find yourself in this world, in this ecosystem, so to say, in your ministry of Loud Voice. Do you mind just kind of giving us a bit of a background of your work here at Loud Voice, a bit of a background, a bit of an idea of like your day-to-day work here? What does it look like?
Okay, so for me to be able to tell you about my work, I need to first tell you a bit about Loud Voice and what we are doing. So previously, Loud Voice, we started out as a ministry, and we really wanted to create this platform very similar to what your ministry is doing, to have producers that come in, speakers, musicians, podcasters, and to be able to network with people. And that was why we created this app called Loud Voice, that anyone can upload their content on our Loud Voice. And through uploading, they can discover that, oh, you know, there's this speaker or there's this musician that I really can connect to their type of music. I might want them, let's say an evangelist goes on Loud Voice and they say, oh, I really want them to be at a particular evangelistic crusade that I'm on. So that's where they can link together with them. So however, COVID hit and the app did not, it took a downturn. We could not develop it in time. So in our time of idleness, we decided that, okay, what could we do? So then we decided to launch a YouTube channel called Loud Voice. For us to be able to get on YouTube's algorithm and to, you know, really push the channel further, we said we needed to create a music video every week. So that was what we started on, a music video every week. Since about 2.5 years ago until today, that's what we are doing, a music video every week. At first, it was crunch time for us. You know, we were thinking, okay, after we push out the channel, once we more or less get like a certain amount of subscribers, then, you know, we'll relax and then we will take things a bit slower, focus on what else we need to do. But that time never came. We kept pushing out. And until today, it's still one music video a week. So coming to my work, what I do every day on a daily basis is there will be a production schedule that we will have a set of planners that will decide, okay, this week we will release this song, this week we release this song, this week we release this song. And based on that schedule, then I would be preparing either the... It's a mixture of either preparing the demo for it, because we'll have singers come in and then they'll need to record to a particular demo. So either I'll be creating a demo for it, or I will be recording people, or I will be editing either the tracks or their voices, or I will be doing arrangements, or I will be filming. Because where we are here at Anan, we do have people that can sing, but not everybody is always available. So usually those that get thrown into a music video are our staffs over here. Myself with a few others, even there are some staffs that say that they have no capability in singing, they'll get thrown in the music video and they'll have to be up on the screen filming and this and that. That's a good mixture of what I do every day. So either creating demos, recording voices, editing the everything, like doing mixing or doing arrangements or filming. On top of that, of course, we have like our usual routine, like cleaning the studio, leadership meetings, meeting with other collaborators. Yeah, that's a good mix of what I'm doing every day.
We start by exploring some of Linus's early inspirations. The start of Linus's musical journey was at 5 years old.
Way back when I was, I think, five years old, my mom discovered that I had some talent in playing the piano, because apparently I have a sister. She was the one that started to play the piano first, went for lessons. But I was a younger, mischievous brother. I started to disturb her while she was practicing. And then, for some reason or another, she stopped lessons. And there was one time where she stopped practicing, but my mom still heard the same piece being played. So it turned out that I was playing that piece that I just heard while I was disturbing my sister. So she was like, huh, this guy has some talent in music, let's send him to music class. So I attended Yamaha Music for, I think, 10 years. 2 years of like fundamentals, and then I went into their special advanced course and their senior special advanced course. So within the special advanced course, they teach you like not only Yamaha grades, like the ABRSM grades from grade 1 to grade 8, which I did not do well at all. Normally people will have to do like grade 1, and then or like sometimes they might even start like grade 5, then skip to grade 7, grade 8. I went through every single grade. And then normally people will be like, in the earlier grades, like distinction, distinction, distinction. The most I had was merit, and then the last few grades I had was like pass, pass, pass. I was telling others that the examiners probably just saw me, oh, this person is probably, you know, like he got dragged into it. Let's just give him some sympathy marks. Okay, just pass it. So, yeah, but then the other thing that Yamaha teaches is actually improvisation, which I really loved. Like one of the practices that I know that they'll give you is like, I'll play a motif and then like just two bars of a melody, and then with that you need to create an entire song. So that was something that they really trained me on, and that really helped me in playing piano in church. So from 5 to 15, that was when I was in Yamaha. I absolutely hated the classical side. I know that Christian really loved the classical side, but I absolutely hated scales, sight reading, practicing. Absolutely hated it. Was forced to do it, got scolded a lot because of it, because of not doing it. But then somehow I got a sympathy pass. But then I really enjoyed playing in church, like playing, accompanying people that are like song leaders, like song services, that kind of thing. So I would say that I got pretty confident in doing it. And then there came a thought, like, why don't I do music as a career? But then I couldn't really figure out, like, I did ask people around. This was when I was like 16, 17. Because usually, like, I'm a Singaporean. So in Singapore, when you finish your O levels, that's like 16, 17. So then you need to decide either you go to college or you go to like a tertiary education. If you go tertiary education, then what kind of subject are you pursuing? Are you pursuing engineering, IT, or this and that? There wasn't pursuing music, because apparently to pursue music, you need to be good in your grades. So if you ask me, do another 4 years of classical music, I'm like, no, if that's necessary for me to pursue music, I'm not going to do it. The other one is like, normally, because the concept of me pursuing music was either be a concert pianist or yeah, that was the only thing, be a concert pianist, because, you know, Yamaha, after that, you go for performances, which I never took part in because I was never good enough. So, and all the concerts would be like on Saturday and that kind of stuff. So that was out of the question for me. There's no future in music. Yeah. So on the other hand, my studies were not very good as well. People were getting A's, B's, I was getting C's, D's. So the only thing that I could do was IT, computer, because at that year, and I almost couldn't enter into it, because that year when I appealed for computer studies, they happened to have, like, instead of taking in 200 students, they suddenly could take 500 students. So I made the cut. So I was like, oh, well, let's do computer, because what do you do in computer school? You play games. No, you do not. You do programming. And that's absolutely boring stuff. So, but then anyway, it turned out that people would say that I bloomed during my tertiary days. I started to do pretty well. And I realized that computer was something that I could do pretty well. So I always did music for church, like, but I always had this thought behind me. Isn't there something more that I could do with my music? Like, is the most that I can do with my music just playing for people, accompanying once a week during church, that kind of thing? Even though I had a thought, but I never actually pursued the idea of actually doing music, because there's no future, right?
Linus grew up in an Adventist family, and his skills developed while serving at Sabbath school.
How I got started in music in church was because when I was in, like, they have, like, their children primary class, then there was one time where either my mom told the pianist for the children class that asked Linus to play piano, you know, that kind of thing. So she's the assertive type. You wouldn't want to anger her, that kind of thing. So she's like, oh, Linus, play the piano. And I was just thrown in, and somehow, because I already knew the song and I was already, like, playing at home, this and that, I could accompany around. So then that was when I started playing for children class week after week after week. And I was 10. When I was the youth class was, you needed to be like 12 or 13 to enter the youth class, but because I already had like a few years from 6 to 10 playing in the children class, they promoted me to youth class early so that I could play for the youth also. And one thing I realized, like, how it impacted my faith was, you know, sometimes when youths go to church, and the reason why they either lose interest in church or why they just, you know, church is not for me, is because they have not learned to serve. And I realized a very important, like, the literal enemy of selfishness is service. So because I've already had the spirit of serving, even though I was forced at the start, but because I enjoyed playing, right? And it was a great alternative to practicing piano at home. So I really enjoyed playing in church. And so it fueled in me the spirit of service. So whenever, like, even now, Linus, can you accompany me on this? Sure. And I would willingly do it. It wasn't like, can't you find somebody else, that kind of thing. Even at last minute, if they can't find a accompanist, Linus, are you able to help me play for this? Sure, you know, that kind of thing. So the spirit of service has already been, like, it's my nurturing, or it's already built up. It has already been in me since I was young, so it naturally led to playing for youth service and then playing for church and even until today. So I would say that why a lot of our youths, or maybe adults or whoever, that choose to leave church is because that maybe either they have not been given the opportunity to serve in church, and they do not see or value the joy of service in church. I also know that sometimes, you know, in church, sometimes if you are good in this, they'll always ask you to do it. And then it can really tire you out and just make you feel so drained. Somehow, I've never felt that way. That I recall my earlier years playing the piano, and I'm always at the piano. Yeah, but it's always been not something that I drag my feet up to, but I bounce up to the piano and play. So I guess that's really the secret ingredient that has kept me faithful. Even though certain times where I have not been even faithful in my spiritual life, but because I've always been serving in church, it has always kept me in the church. something like that. It has just been so ingrained into my character of service. It wasn't that one time miraculous conversion experience, but it's really just a little by little it builds, like, you know, like you put a stone and after that it becomes a mountain. Yeah, so it's like every week when I serve in church, it's like a little stone that has been placed, and now in me that's a mountain of faithfulness, character.
Right.
I'm not sure how
to describe
what you
mean. Yeah. So it's not like you had one experience where it's like, I really enjoyed that experience, so therefore I continue just going up that mountain. You're kind of just like, you are put in that position, you did that faithfully every week, and then that just became something more like a part of your character.
Yeah, and I would imagine, like, sometimes people would ask me, oh, you are, you know, releasing one music video every week, and sometimes your music videos are so many tracks you have to, like, especially there was 100 plus tracks that we looked at. How do you edit all of that, you know? How do you pitch correct all of that? And I'm like, I don't know. It just, every music video that is completed just adds a little stone to my small or big mountain that God has been adding every week. Yeah, so it's always been a weekly thing that has happened.
It reminds me of what Christian said in one of the past podcasts, is that a music ministry is like a product of faithfulness or something like that. It's born out of being faithful. It's not like it just all of a sudden you have a music ministry. It's something that has happened over time. It's just built up.
And I think that's very much like our character building as well. Like, we don't expect like a, you know, suddenly I stop smoking or I'm suddenly able to control my temper perfectly. But it's by everyday struggle, everyday victory that is able to truly build that character. Character is not built in one instant, but it's true little by little every day. Yeah, something like that.
Linus graduated from college with a degree in IT and began to work as a software developer. It was during his time working for a manufacturing company when his journey as a sound engineer began.
There was one day that I was idle at work. Don't tell my boss that. So I literally just searched, like, it just pissed in my mind. I said, I'm good in computers. I'm good in music. Let's just search for a computer music school. Whether there is anything in the world that gels these two together. So Google showed me audio engineering course in the School of Music and Arts. So I'm like, huh, that sounds interesting. And then I clicked into the program. I saw its curriculum. I didn't understand most of it. Like, what is mixing, blending, or this and that? Like, what is golden years? What is this and that? Just full of weird jargons. But I'm like, oh, well. After 2 years of working, I managed to save up a bit. So the course was like, I think at that time, it was about $7,000 for like a...
And who were you working with at the time?
I was working with a software company.
What's the name?
Infineon.
I do also.
So that's the... There's a picture.
There's a picture
behind,
on the wall.
Yeah,
of his friends from Infineon. Yeah.
Yeah. So they are a manufacturing company. So I was building software for the manufacturing plant, something like that. So it was a 9-month course, and then I thought, okay, I mean, it's a bit of money, but if it can help me open my eyes to what might actually work, I mean, it will probably be worth it. So then that was where I started to go into the course. And I remember the course, they demanded that we buy Pro Tools with an Mbox 2.
Oh, really?
Mbox 2, Mbox 2 Mini, or Mbox 2 Pro.
What's an Mbox Mini? What's an Mbox?
It's the audio interface that last time you could only use Pro Tools with that interface.
It was only specifically used for Pro Tools.
You couldn't use any others for that.
And neither could you use any other audio interface with
Pro
Tools.
And actually, that's the one up there. Pro Tools.
Yep, that's the old.
Yeah, so I was thinking, oh, so expensive, you know? On top of the cost that I pay, you still need to buy a piece of hardware. So I'm like, let's just choose the cheapest one. So I got the Mbox 2 Mini, which doesn't work now because you need an older... Yeah, but anyway, so then along the way, that was actually the first piece of hardware that I used. Yeah, and when it was working, it was pretty stable, and that was where I learned how to use Pro Tools.
Hey Adventist Waves listeners, we are so glad that you're tuning in. Before we dive back into today's episode, I wanted to take a moment to tell you about our amazing community on Patreon. If you're enjoying Adventist Waves, you'll love connecting with other like-minded Seventh-day Adventist musicians, sound engineers, and podcasters on our Patreon page. For as little as $5 a month, you can join the community, get access to exclusive content, and directly support the creation of this podcast. Plus, at higher tiers, you can even get more perks like early access to podcasts, question and answer sessions with guests, and even shout outs on the show. So if you're ready to dive deeper into the Adventist Wave community, head over to patreon.com/Adventist Waves. Your support means the world to us, and we can't wait to welcome you to the Adventist Waves family. Linus was doing pretty well as a software developer, but he began to realize that God had a higher calling on his life. And after talking to his boss, God opened up the way for him to move to Malaysia and become a full-time missionary.
There were actually two thoughts that were, there were multiple thoughts that were always at the back of my mind. First thought was, how can I use music to serve God? Okay. Second thought was, how can I be a full-time missionary for God? The third thought was actually, how can I move to the country? Yeah, but I'm going to talk about the second one, to be a full-time missionary. There was, growing up, you know, they had these youth camps, revival camps, held by Anan, and then they would have like speakers that come in to give altar calls. And then there was this time, one time where Alistair Huang, I think it was 2006, he came and then he gave an altar call. He said, what if God told you to make a 180-degree turn in your life today? Would you do it? And at that time, I thought, like, I'm really serving God in church, you know, with this, with like helping out, and then I give my tithe, I help out with music. I'm sure, I think I'm quite okay already. But then when you say make a 180-degree turn, I was thinking, what more can I give for God? If I'm really giving Him like so much that I thought I am, then the next appeal came is, would you want to be a full-time missionary for God for 1 year? And I was just thinking, that would definitely, you know, allow me to serve more. But then what about like my finances and this and that? So I put it at the back of my thought. If there's a way that I could support myself, I would definitely want to be a full-time missionary for God. So fast forward a few years, in 2011, I actually mustered the courage after I did the audio engineering course. You know, the president of this place, David Fahmy, said, Linus, you should give your life to God. You should do music for God. Then I'm like, okay, I'll do music for God. So I went to my boss. I said, boss, I want to resign. I want to, you know, I want to stop working here. He gave me a very puzzled look because I was very happy in my company. I had friends around. I was doing very well. I was on a path. I was on a good career path. So he said, something is wrong, right? Like, is there anything wrong? Then I asked him, boss, do you have a dream? I said, what is your dream? He said, oh, my dream went away when I had kids. Then I needed to start working for them, you know, like this and that. So then so I said, my dream is to become a full-time missionary. Then he said, for how long? And then I said, at least 2 years. I said, okay. Then he started to sit me down and reason through. Said, 2 years, full-time missionary means you will not get paid. Said, yeah, I will pay using my own savings and do whatever. And then he said, what do you want to do? Then I said, I want to start a studio. So he said, oh, studio, do you have hardware? At that time, I had a M-Box Mini. I had these two Adam speakers. I had an M-Audio keyboard and my own laptop. So that was enough for now. I said, no. But I will spend money to buy more. So he said, okay, you will spend money to buy things for your studio. You'll spend money to for your own survival. What if you run out of money? I said, no, God will provide. Then he said that after 2 years, what do you plan to do? I said, well, if I finish serving there, I will come back to Infineon. What if we don't want you? You know, IT, the moment you learn, your skills are obsolete already. 2 years of not doing IT, your skills are obsolete. You might not have the right skills that you might not want you anymore. Then I'm like, God will provide, you know. So he said, okay, let's not be rash. Let's think it through. You continue praying to your God. I'll see, and because I was in Singapore, right, I needed to move to Malacca, which is in Malaysia. So he said, all this, you know, where will you stay? Malaysia, you need a car, you need to invest in all this kind of thing. So then he said, well, let's just, you know, think it through and let's see how we can help each other again. Because you're a good worker, I do not want to lose you. So 2012, then he said, okay, remember we talked about this, like, during that time for 1 year, I was just, you know, faithful in doing what in whatever that work demanded. And then he said, remember we talked about this, and then now an opportunity has come up. Here is my plan for you. We have a factory in Malacca, which is this factory over here. And then the project that you have done in Singapore, we are planning to roll it out in Malacca as well. So we can send you there as an expatriate, which we are going to send you there anyway. As an expatriate, you will have a place to stay because we are sending you there. You will rent a car for you. So, and you will have extra living allowances that you will need there. So your survival is taken care of. And because you are earning Sing dollars, you are spending in ringgit, which is like 3 times more. Now today is 3.5 times more, but last time it's 3 times more. So you will have your own pay. So we are covering for your food and lodging, and you will have extra expenses that can help to finance your studio. And you will say you want to do it for 2 years, we are sending you for 3 years. So that's one extra year for you to go and play. Not play, like do continue to do it. And then along the way, actually, I extended for 1 more year. So I ended up doing 4 years. So I was here, and then many things that you are seeing, like the microphone, the preamp, they're all bought using, and a lot of other, like the acoustic treatment is all bought using that funds. And then when 4 years came up, he said, okay, done, happy, come back. I said, no, I want to stay here because I feel that God really wants me here. And he said, HR policy-wise, we can't really do that for you because 4 years is the max. You will need to come back here, then we can send you on something else again. I said, no, I really need to stay in Malacca. He said, well, another alternative is for you to convert to a local employee, which was what I did. But then the only difference was now instead of earning Sing dollars, I'm earning ringgit. So at the peak of my career, with all my living allowances, I was earning about 21,000 ringgit. So converting over to Malaysia employee, I had to earn, it was just, instead of 21,000, I'm earning 7,000 now. So that's like a 60% drop in, yeah. So, but that was a crisis to others, but not to me, because I'm like, I'm happy doing here. But this crisis was able to, in people's mind, they were like, what in the world is Linus doing? So then they started to ask me when they knew about my situation. So they, when they asked me, then this crisis made it into a witnessing opportunity. Everybody that asked me, they would say, are you crazy? What are you doing? You too much money, is it? If you too much money, why don't you give me some? That kind of thing. So I will share with them, you know, the dream, and then basically what I'm sharing with you, I will share it with them. And then I was in Malacca in Malaysia for the next 2 years. That was when my salary rose from 7K to about 10K. Yeah, I'm still working for Infineon, and I'm also helping out with, like, every weekend I'll be over here just doing some, like, playing around with recording people, this and that, helping out the previous ministry over here. So 2 years later, then I felt the call to go more into ministry, so not just dedicate 1 day or 2 days, 1.5 days a week, but more time. So then I spoke to my Malacca boss, is it possible to do part-time? Actually, I didn't speak to her about the possibility of doing part-time. I spoke to her, I told her I wanted to resign. So she said that, why, you are doing well here, you have a good career path, you have good friends, I don't think there's anything that is wrong here. So I told her about this, she already knew about this, and I told her that I needed to spend more time here. So then she said, why don't you work part-time? So from 10,000, my pay was then just reduced to 5,000, and that people asked even more questions. And then after 6 months of doing part-time, Loud Voice started. Yeah, so then I told her that I would love to continue part-time, but I needed more time here. And then from 5,000, it just got reduced to like a missionary salary, you know? Normally people say a missionary salary is like almost nothing.
Stipend,
yeah, just a stipend. Yeah. So, yeah, like I lost out a lot financially, but to me, I thank God that I gained so much more. Yeah. Like previously, how do I serve God with music? I'm able to serve God with music. Then the other thought, how am I supposed to survive as a full-time missionary? God has allowed that as well. And of course, the other one, to move to the country, that God has also allowed that.
Yeah. Linus didn't make this decision alone. He and his wife prayed to God about it together and moved forward by faith.
I'll just cut the story short to when we are married. And we got married in 2017. And that was when I was just staying across the road from my company. So I was renting an apartment there, and then I just walked to work every day. And she would wait for me to come back for lunch, and then I'll go back after that. So there was a point in time just before COVID where she felt the call to be a full-time missionary as well. I never told her that I had the thought to become a full-time missionary. But then when she told me that, you know, I think we should start to, we should move to Anand to start serving there. Then I told her that I've always been praying for the time where I would become a full-time missionary. But I did not want to pressure her, because I've seen families where, you know, the husband suddenly has a realization, oh, I need to become a full-time missionary. And then he drags the entire family along. And then they suffer because of it. And then the family breaks up. Or they go through several crisis or trials.
So you wanted your wife to be convicted on the same thing as you.
Yeah, so I was always praying, but I wasn't praying for her to be convicted. I was just praying for God to open a way that I would be able to serve as a full-time missionary. So before COVID, she actually came to me and she said that, Linus, I think we should move to Anand. And that was when I did not quit my job at that point, but I just commuted. So we stayed at Anand, and then I commuted every day. Yeah, and where she was trained as a therapist here at Anand. So that was how we moved. And because of that move, like a little while after we moved, there was a whole lockdown in Malaysia, you know, with COVID and lockdown. We couldn't move across states, this and that. So we were very thankful that, I mean, I believe that it's all God's plan that he saved us from the COVID lockdown.
Yeah,
yeah, so it was really amazing how it all worked out. Yeah, so literally when we had COVID, we were still walking around because this is our house, right? Our backyard and this and that. So it was still very good.
Music is a way that Linus can share his own experience with Christ. The arrangements that he makes is an expression of the truths that have personally impacted his life.
On top of it being my service to God, I see expression of faith as really the process of living out your Christianity. Like, because faith is, if you really think about it, faith is your belief in God, who you think God is to you. The service that I give to him is a result of the gratitude that I have towards him. It's like a thanksgiving to him on how he has led me, on what he has done for me. And I see myself as not the end product, but as the medium on how he can reach others, like a tool and instrument. So God equips me, not because I use it for myself, but so that I can be a blessing to others, that I can be of service to others, that I can be, that I can help them experience him more. And I think that's really the very basis of the music that I do. Because, like, let's say back to song service or accompaniments. Like, for example, a song has four stanzas. Let's say three stanzas, four stanzas, five stanzas. What I do with each stanza, or normally if people ask me, every stanza, normally what I do is I will read the lyrics, and then I will try to play the music in a way that would allow people to experience the lyrics more. And most of the time, that that the way that I play is, it's because I have experienced it first, and therefore I play it and allow people to experience it. Like, for example, let's say the song It Is Well With My Soul, right? The first stanza is talks about no matter what you go through, your foot is still firmly like you are still firmly rooted in Christ, because trials might be around, willows might roll around, but then it is still well with your soul. I have experienced that for myself, and when I play, it allows me to express that same emotion through my playing, and it hopefully allows the listener to also experience that as well. So I'm like telling my testimony through that. And the second stanza is like, my sin not in part but the whole is nailed to the cross, right? So I also reflect upon the sin that I have, that Christ has paid for it. The last stanza is like, you know, our faith being materialized, the clouds be rolled back as a scroll, and Christ descends. So just as I've experienced it, I also share it through my music with others as well. So like the music that I do every week is like a testament, or is like a story or a testimony of what I've experienced and what I hope that other people can experience as well, to give them like a taste of how good Christ has been to me.
No, that makes sense. Yeah. So it's like, I really love how you said that, like by you experiencing that first yourself, you're able to then help other people experience that, and you use the emotional, the movements of the songs and the piano that you're recording and you're producing there to actually get that, like spark that emotional response in your listeners, so then they're able to have that same experiences as you. That's why music is such a powerful way to connect with people, isn't it?
Yeah, music is an extremely powerful tool, and when used in conjunction with like preaching, evangelistic meetings, it's really so powerful, because I feel that music is the cultivation of the ground, and is to prepare the heart for the seed to be sown in. Over here at Anand, we do farming every day. There are certain times where the soil is just so rock hard. You throw the seed, it'll bounce. Not that it'll bounce back at you, but it'll just land on the ground, but not go in. The sun comes out, and yeah. But music is what you when you add in the chicken manure and you cultivate it. When the seed goes in, you almost don't need to tap it in. It just goes in and it just sprouts from there.
Right.
Yeah,
because it creates that condition of the heart,
exactly,
for the Bible and the Word of God to become alive in their life.
Yeah, so it's really so powerful how music is.
This has been the first part of Linus Wee's testimony. You do not want to miss the next episode. We dive deeper into Linus's studio setup, and he gives you a look into two of his favorite compositions. That's next time on Adventist Waves. We hope this episode of Adventist Waves has given you a fresh perspective on how media can be a powerful tool for ministry. If you enjoyed today's conversation, don't forget to subscribe, leave a review, and connect with us on social media. You can also support our work directly by becoming a patron at patreon.com/Adventist_waves. Your generosity enables us to produce more high-quality content and reach a wider audience. Special thanks to our production team at Blue Vineyard Audio. We'll see you next week as we continue to explore the art of sharing the gospel through sound.
Adventist Waves,